Hello world, this is Stephen Francis, and you're listening to the Humble and Honest Podcast. Today's episode is with Eddie Williams. Eddie Williams is the lead pastor of Bay City Church in San Francisco. Eddie is a former NFL player. He is married to Sarah, and they have three children. Eddie is a Bay Area native with a passion to better San Francisco. Eddie Williams is not only passionate about the gospel, but also health and fitness. Today, we talk about how Christians should care about health and also the best ways to be healthy physically and emotionally. Get ready. This conversation is going to challenge and inspire you to better health. Hear it now for yourself, my conversation with Eddie Williams. Eddie Williams, this is such a great honor to have you on the show today.
Hey, I'm honored. Thank you so much for having me. Look forward to it.
Absolutely. Eddie, I'm a big fan of yours and your content, Ex Nihilo Health. I think it's incredible. And we're going to dive all into that. But before we dive into that stuff, let's first start off with who is Eddie Williams? How did he get to the platform he is today? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm a guy from San Francisco. I grew up, born and raised in the Bay Area, and mom and dad were never married. Dad left our family at a young age and bounced around the Bay Area on Section 8, trying to make a living. And my mom lost her life when I was 13. So we went into the foster system for a bit and didn't know Jesus, wasn't a believer or anything like that. Nothing like that until I got to college and went to University of Idaho on a football scholarship, somehow kind of coming out of the turbulent childhood thing and became a Christian there and playing football. Wanted to still kind of pursue the NFL thing. At the time, I had no idea I had even a shot at playing in the NFL. You know, every 18-year-old kid thinks he's going to the NFL. So I was one of them. And I think kind of got hit with a little bit of the kind of the Christian thing and met Jesus there. And it kind of threw a wrench in my gears. And I started kind of exploring that. And so that was kind of the deviation off my path of football there. And then I met my wife, actually. She was a volleyball player at the University of Idaho. Met her. And we kind of just started kind of growing together, iron sharpening iron together. So it was kind of fantastic how all of that kind of call came to a head. And then I did, as I was getting ready for the NFL combine, my last year in college, I blew my knee out and spent the next 9 months, I'm just trying to recover and discover, you know, how do I mentally deal with the setback of having an injury like that? I mean, quite honestly, it is such a huge mental challenge, you know, to figure out how to get overcome something like this. So as I'm, you know, kind of as in the midst of trying to overcome all of this mental struggle of blowing your knee out and not knowing if you're going to get drafted, that's kind of where the Lord met me in an even greater capacity. And so I spent those 9 months reading my Bible and getting ready. And, you know, I still got drafted, played 5 years in the NFL, four teams, got hurt a lot, but learned a lot as well. And kind of coming out of that, I always knew I wanted to be a pastor. When I met Jesus, like 6 months after that, I was like, man, I want to get saved, but I also want to go into ministry, not necessarily knowing what I was getting myself into. Yeah, so that's kind of it. The rest is history, man. And now the fusion of health and wellness from my football background and kind of some of my story as a young preteen growing up with my mother and my father and their health issues, that fusion with the scriptures is kind of what led me to Ex Nihilo Health.
So here's the thing. What I really like about what you're doing is, quite frankly, just how unique it is. I don't know a lot of Christian or even preachers that are speaking on health to the level that you're doing it. Why do you believe health isn't as much of a priority as it is amongst Christians? Do you believe that?
I do. You know, and that's a lot of the reason why, you know, Ex Nihilo Health is important to me. I think that in Western society, modern Western society is very dualistic. And what I mean by that is that we look at the physical and we see, you know, desk, computer, camera, right? All of these different things. We see them as physical. And then there's a spiritual side. And those two things are, you know, largely separate. You know, I can pray, I can fast, I can, you know, I believe I can communicate with God. I believe there's worship and all these different things. And all those things are really good. And then there's also the physical, and those two things aren't necessarily tied together. That's a primarily Western idea. I mean, obviously, we worship a humble Galilean peasant God. We understand that Christianity in and of itself is a messianic Jewish religion. It's a Middle Eastern religion, fundamentally. it's not a Western idea, but we've kind of allowed our Western mindset to kind of seep in. And so we believe the body's kind of a separate thing, and then our spirits are separate. But what we know is that these two things aren't actually separate. In fact, the scripture doesn't really speak of it that way. And we always see the fundamental tying together of the physical and the spiritual in scripture. And so the body and the spirit, these two things, the mind as well, these three things, all relatively connected. So we've kind of taken those, we've separated those things. And quite honestly, you know, I think we've been able to manage health to some degree in the United States, although COVID-19 is kind of revealing that maybe we can't do that as well as we thought. We've been able to manage our health in a way that it isn't a thing. We're not necessarily fearful of dying on a regular basis, unless, you know, of course, we get sick. I think COVID-19, though, is providing an opportunity for people like us to kind of be able to speak into the world where people have ears that are more receptive. So maybe I do need to take care of myself. And maybe there is a tie into caring for my body and also worshiping God as well. So I think there is a connection.
So here's the first thing I want to get into. You bring up a great point. Christians are people in general, people in the West view things very dualistically. But also scripture talks about our whole body basically as a temple and treating it as such, which is interesting too, because I think a lot of people like to say, oh, your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. You need to take care of it. And often that's used to say, don't smoke, don't overly drink. But I think you definitely would say, well, that probably would go towards McDonald's as well and other sets. When you hear that verse, how do you interpret it? Or what's your issue sometimes when you hear people bring that verse up specifically? I'm curious.
Yeah, I think it's funny because in Christians in particular, I mean, if you go online for anything, like Christians will analyze everything spiritually, right? You know, it's like, what does God say about watching this TV show? I mean, I've seen blogs and YouTube posts. Are we supposed to watch Game of Thrones? Should we watch HBO? You know, is Modern Family a good show? And then what about this movie? And then we've got, like, you know, Instagram accounts, prophets and watches and preachers and sneakers. Should we wear these shoes? Should we wear these watches? Should we wear these clothes? All these different things. And we think of everything in spiritual terms. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But what's interesting is we almost never address eating and wellness from a spiritual perspective. Almost never, like that's almost never a conversation. And in fact, if you do bring it up, you're somehow seen as kind of like this overbearing fundamentalist, right? And you talk about 1 Corinthians 6, you know, is your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, whom you have from God, you're not your own, you're bought with a price. Like we actually hear kind of Paul put pen to paper in this, and we see that God is looking at our bodies as something specific. Right? We obviously, in the Old Testament, you looked at the temple as the primary dwelling place of God's presence. But in the new covenant with Jesus, you now see the believer as the primary residence of the Holy Spirit. And so everyone who's a believer, everyone's a Christian, the Holy Spirit dwells within them. And so as a result, Paul's saying, hey, you need to carefully steward that body out of reverence, out of respect, out of honor, and for stewardship because of what God is doing, right? God is trying to set you apart. Now, if you remember the old dietary laws in the Old Testament, even if you think about those, those were primarily given to Israel. I mean, there was a few reasons, but one of them was certainly for health and certainly to keep Israel from dying, from being unclean, but also to set Israel apart from the surrounding nations. And so we can kind of see that as believers today, if we're trying to take that principle and bring it into our lives, man, there's probably something we need to do to set our bodies apart today from the rest of the world, because what we do know is that normal in America is sick and dying, maybe slowly, but certainly unhealthy.
That's a big pill to swallow. And I think one that we really need to actually do take the time to digest, though. You know, the other thing that's very popular now, there's a lot of fad diets. And I don't know if they fit fad diets, but let's talk about it. So you got the keto, you got the paleo, intermittent fasting is big. At the time of this recording, there's a lot of things in the press right now because Adele did Saturday Night Live, and apparently she's on something called the Cert Food Diet. With your expertise, which of these diets do you feel is worth a try and maybe something that we should be avoiding altogether?
Well, you know, I guess my principle is when I get asked this question, I think if someone's not on any diet, then probably, and they're just kind of eating kind of as their taste and their hunger guides them, then it's probably good to get on something, even if it's something that maybe isn't the best for you. So if, you know, that's why you see a lot of people with like getting on vegan or vegetarian diets or even like a thing like Whole30, and they're coming off of eating, you know, pizza and regular food, burritos and tacos and cereal for breakfast. And so they jump onto these diets and immediately they get healthy. So my first piece of advice is, if you're not doing anything and you stumble onto a diet, you're probably going to find something that's good, as long as it's not this crazy crash diet. But like, which of these diets is best? I mean, I think all of them have their own merit. Like, so if you're looking at, if you're coming off a standard American diet, which, you know, ironically, the acronym for that is a SAD diet, which it is a SAD diet, right? It's really sad that, you know, you're eating Starburst for dessert after dinner, especially around Halloween time, right? So, you know, if you're coming off of anything like that, something like a vegetarian diet would be actually pretty good, because you're going to eliminate a lot of junk food. You're going to eliminate a lot of processed meat, going to eliminate a lot of sugar. If you're getting onto a diet like a vegan diet, vegan diets always typically have really good results at the front end. And the reason is because they do function as an elimination diet. They force you to eliminate lots of things. Fast food has to go out the window because you can't eat a lot of that. Those cheeseburgers and fried chicken and things like that. You have to eliminate most, you know, lots of different pizza because you can't eat the cheese. So you're eliminating these different diets. But what we do find with some of the diets, especially vegan diets, is even though those diets are really good, is that they do have some limits. There's some limitations with some of those diets, because there's some things that, you know, that vegan diets can't provide for you. You have things like vitamin K2, high amounts of vitamin D3, or even B12, fundamental things you're missing in those diets. I think a keto diet is a really good diet as well. Typically, when you get onto the keto diet, you know, people get onto it and they're like, man, this, I feel great. You know, for the first few days, actually, you feel pretty terrible because you get the keto flu, they call it. Your body's switching from glucose, burning glucose, to something called ketones. And that's your brain's preferred fuel source. But it takes a few days to switch. And so you kind of feel crummy. But then once you switch onto it, you're feeling amazing. Ketogenic diets typically work really well. But here's the thing with keto diets. There's something called dirty keto. And dirty keto is when you're eating junk foods that technically qualify as keto, but actually it's like, you know, think about it, it's like putting like really poor quality fuel into your Lamborghini. That thing needs premium fuel to run optimally. And we need premium fuel to run optimally. And so when you eat like cream cheese and high fat industrial meats, these things are technically keto, but it's really, really poor fuel. And so you might lose some weight, but you'll feel really terrible. I think the best diet is a cyclical ketogenic diet. A cyclical ketogenic diet is essentially a keto diet that lasts anywhere from 4, 5, 6 days, but then you're able to then have some carbohydrates in the form of high quality carbohydrate fuels like sweet potatoes or rice, something high quality, something that's not grain related. That allows your body to go use ketones, and it creates something called metabolic flexibility, which means your body's able to switch from burning glucose to ketones readily and easier. And the more you go in and out of ketosis, the easier it is your body to switch, and the shorter that kind of keto flu is. But the main reason I think that diet might be the best, and something called the bulletproof diet, which a guy named Dave Asprey popularized, very similar to a typical ketogenic diet, is that the reason why I think those diets are best, and it's not dirty keto related, is because it recalls for eating food as close to the way God made the food as possible. And I think that's the primary principle, biblically speaking, that we want. We want to eat food that is close to the way God made it. And so that means we want to eat grass-fed meat, wild-caught fish, foods that are high quality, foods that aren't tainted and GMO'd, foods that don't have a lot of synthetic oils and vegetables, sunflower, canola oils that we've created. What we find is that the times that we get involved into the kitchen with God and we start kind of synthesizing and creating things, we tend to mess up the human biology when we eat the food. And so if we eat the food as natural as possible, things like organic vegetables without things like Roundup sprayed on them, or these wild-caught fish, or these pasture-raised eggs, then we actually feel the best. We perform the best, and we are able to regulate our body weight to the weight that we actually want it to.
Hey world, I hope you're enjoying this conversation so far. I want to let you know of a couple ways that you can support this show. If you haven't already, you can subscribe, share, and leave a review for the podcast so more people get the chance to know about it. Also, you can be a contributor through Patreon. For as low as $1 a month, you can support this show and help continue these conversations you are hearing. As a thank you, all Patreon contributors are going to be receiving all the episodes of Season 2 in their entirety. This episode that you are listening to is only a clip of what was fully discussed. We talked about the NFL, we talked about race relations. So much more was shared, and if you are a Patreon contributor, you get to hear all of it. Check it out for yourself. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can't miss it. But right now, let's get back into this conversation with Eddie Williams.
So that's the diet I'm going to call for.
That's great. And I actually want to even go a little bit deeper too, because something that you have on your show or your YouTube channel is God food, which I thought was a very interesting term. And the other thing about that, in contrast, because you talk about dirty keto and things that seemingly are fine, but when you actually look kind of at the origin of those things, they actually aren't that good for you. You brought up a story too the other day that I thought was so interesting about, I guess there was some natural disaster in another country and Americans gave them some of our food and it had a negative result. Do you remember this story?
Oh yeah, this is during the Iraq War when some of the countryside was decimated and George Bush, I believe it was Bush who was the president at the time, the military did a drop of food because there was either a famine or there were some food supplies that were cut off. And they dropped a number of different things down, you know, Ritz crackers, Honeywell snacks, you know, Pop-Tarts, things like that. And the people in the region, they got sick. They got sick because they don't typically eat food that is manufactured in a lab. The common vernacular in health and wellness circles is Frankenfood. This is food that we've kind of manufactured primarily with synthetic oils and high sugar, and then also trans fats, you know, hydrogenated oils, but then also manufactured sugars, high fructose corn syrup. Our body actually doesn't know what to do with this fuel. So some of us are used to eating it so much to the point where we don't notice it as much and we just always feel crummy. So we never actually have felt optimal. And so we just think, oh no, it's fine. But if you were to drop some food off into the Middle East or like they did with the Haiti earthquake and you were to give them some of those foods, they or their bodies don't know what to do because they're used to eating food from the ground. They're used to eating ancient grains that were grown in the ground, vegetables and fruits and stews and animals that they raise. So they don't know what to do with hormone pumped chickens. They don't know what to do with that. It's funny, actually, crazy enough, our kids eat pretty healthy, me and my wife's kids. And so we were on a road trip recently. And we were in the middle of nowhere. It's 11 o'clock at night. There's no gas stations. There's one thing around for miles. This is horrible. It's a Jack in the Box. Okay. Now, when I was 17, I used to love Jack in the Box. But as an adult, I don't eat a lot of Jack in the Box. So I actually brought it to my kids. And I was like, okay, like, my goodness, we're going to do this. So I was like, let's get fries or something. So we got them a fries and a cheeseburger. And my kids took a bite and didn't eat it. Now, have you ever met a 7-year-old that doesn't eat a Happy Meal? Like, it just doesn't happen. But they took a bite. They're like, this isn't, they didn't know how to eat it. It wasn't food to them. Now, that's kind of what happened during that natural disaster, is that our bodies just don't know how to process it unless we normalize it, which we do in America.
Obviously, Jack in the Box isn't preferred. Is there any fast food, if you said, you know what, this is the healthiest of fast foods that you can get, does that even exist for you? Or are you just like, don't even go there?
I prefer, if I can't get high quality food the way we just described it, if I can't get that food, I'd rather just fast. And fasting is a lost art in America. We believe we're, you know, the FDA or whatever we learned in grade school, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 3 square meals, and then sprinkle in some snacks in there. And so we'll eat for breakfast a bowl of oatmeal to get the glucose roller coaster going, and maybe some bananas and brown sugar. And then we'll have a snack around 10:30. Consisting of a granola bar or something like that, maybe an apple. And then for lunch, we'll have a sandwich, maybe chips or a salad, something like that. And so we're constantly feeding, you know, kind of taking this fuel and shoveling it into the coal furnace almost every time. But that's actually not how body's biology runs optimally. We have to eat like that because we are spiking our blood glucose so often that if we don't eat, we get cranky. Like you see those Snickers commercials where like, the guy turns into Joe Pesci because he hasn't had anything to eat, right? It's hilarious. But that kind of does happen to us. We turn into like this crazy person because we haven't had a snack. And that's because our blood glucose, our blood sugar plummets after it's spiking. When you fast, you're not spiking blood sugar at all. In fact, it goes down to baseline. That's essentially what happens in a ketogenic diet. And eventually, after a certain amount of time, your body will eventually kick over to burning ketones. which also helps you burn body fat, by the way. And so if I can't get a good source of food, I will skip the meal. And what we're told in school is don't skip meals. That's so bad for you. Or in the bodybuilding community, it's like, if you skip a meal, you're going to lose all your hard-earned gains or whatever. You know, you get all these different variations. But the toll on your body of eating a hormone-pumped animal, which, by the way, is horrible for the environment. Not only that, it's terrible for you because it creates the inflammation in your body. The toll of inflammation, brain fog, fatigue, and then eventually the irritability of having like a bun or french fries. You've heard of the 2:30 feeling, right? 5-hour energy had their like big marketing thing, the 2:30 feeling. That's because you ate pizza for lunch or pasta for lunch, and eventually your blood glucose went down, and now you're like, oh, I'm tired. I want to go sleep. God didn't create us to have a 2:30 feeling, and Jesus certainly didn't have walking around with 2:30 feelings, because, you know, he stopped at the local, Israel fast food restaurant and had too much pita, and now he doesn't know how to manage himself. That's not how it works. But I would prefer to fast. And if you are going to stop somewhere, you know, try to find some raw nuts, maybe some, if you are going to eat meat, find the leanest meat you can, because the fat in industrial meat is really bad for you. But the fat in high quality grass fed meat is really good for you. It's high in omega-3s. So I would find maybe some lean beef jerky if I absolutely had to, some water or some raw nuts or some organic fruit, something like that. And if you absolutely have to eat from a restaurant, man, maybe a salad without any meat. That's probably the best you can do. That's not a great popular answer, and it doesn't taste as good, but yeah, that's why I don't go to those restaurants to eat.
Something that, again, I appreciate about your show on YouTube is you have a lot to say about, yes, actual consuming of food. But you also are very clear on where you stand in regards to the consumption of technology. Being on your phone, looking at screens all day, even just the posture by which we sit at our desk, you have a lot to say on that. And I want to talk about that because I'm sure there's a lot of things you said when the world was not what it was today. Now with COVID-19, kids are in front of screens all day. Why is it important to have boundaries and even just an idea of putting down the phone in our lives, putting down technology in our lives? And also, how do we operate that way in the midst of this pandemic world where, honestly, our livelihoods are now completely digital? Talk to us about that.
Well, I think we're all living through to a large degree, we're all living through an experiment. And I don't even mean, certainly with COVID-19, but I don't even mean that. I think with technology in general. I mean, you can think back 15 years. I mean, the iPhone was in 2007. So 13 years, there was a touchscreen phone. And before that, like, what did you do, you know, with your free time? I mean, we all pick up our phones at the doctor's office or, you know, waiting in the car for someone to come out of the house. Or we pick up our phone with every dead moment. One of the first things that almost every American does when they wake up is roll over and check their phone. So we now have gone from never really using these devices at all, Rick, never really even having them, maybe a phone to text and maybe email if you had like an old BlackBerry, to being completely and utterly dependent on these devices. So what's happening here is we're living through a radical experiment of social media, which we can get into, being constantly connected, and then being almost omnipresent and omnipotent, having all knowledge in our pocket at the click of a few buttons. And so Elon Musk said in an interview a while ago, he said that he believes we're cyborgs already. Like, he thinks we'll eventually get to being cyborgs where we have like these chips implanted in our head that seem so futuristic. But then we're actually maybe cyborgs already. In fact, we have extended on our arm, we have these devices that we can actually find an answer to any question in the history of mankind if we ask the right question. Now, that is a whole heck of a lot of power. So how do we manage that? I don't know if we know how to fully do that yet, but there are some ways that we should probably try. Because what we do know is that we're more anxious, we're more tired, we're more depressed than we've ever been. You know, I once had a conversation with somebody in Silicon Valley. There's a whole nonprofit that deals with, you know, stress and overwork and how the prevalence of overwork has kind of overcome Silicon Valley. You know, I think to a large degree, a lot of people are overworked, but I think rather than being overworked, I think we're overstimulated. I think many of us are actually in every moment of free time staring at a screen. And so we have instant, we have emails coming to our phones now, text messages, phone calls, dings and buzzes. Your phone was designed to reward you with dopamine every time you get a ding. And so, so the people in Silicon Valley and Facebook and Google and Twitter, they have discovered how to manipulate your biology to make you a slave to your device. In fact, that's how every product works. Every product is trying to manipulate you to get you to partake of it. Except that this one is always on your person, and we've gotten so good at it that now we're becoming addicted. Social media has also done this as well, right? Social media has also begun to leverage the same people that created slot machines in Las Vegas to get you to become addicted to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat, TikTok. They're using these same mechanisms, like the swipe down method where it kind of spin, the circle spins and then it refreshes your feed. That doesn't have to be like that, but it feels good, right? Ah, and then you get rewarded with dopamine when you see a whole fresh feed in front of you or the red dot on the app. Like, oh, what's that? Like, that's red. That's indicating that there's something there for me. We are being manipulated with our social media and with our devices. And so in order to overcome, until once eventually we all kind of realize that this is killing us all, in order to overcome this, we're going to have to do some practical things. So one of the things I always say to do is, well, just leverage, at least try to leverage the phone against itself to control your addictions. And so one of the things that like Apple did was they put screen time on all their devices. Instituting screen time, causing your phone to shut off at specific hours is a huge, huge thing. In fact, I actually give my password to my wife. So my phone turns on, I'm able to use my phone at 5 a.m. every morning and it shuts off at 10 o'clock at night. And so if I were to like accidentally want to wake up and try to like look at my phone, I can't actually do it. I limit social media to 30 minutes a day. So every social media adds the time and then it shuts it off. You'll be surprised how embarrassed you feel like the first 4 or 5 days you do this. You're like, man, I keep getting dinged. I'm on social media a lot. We have this desire to be constantly connected. But unfortunately, our technology is like a faux version of this. It's not an actual, it's not the community God created us for. It's a worse version of it. It's like an instant noodles version of what we're actually longing for. And so if you can't sleep without a podcast, an audiobook, or Netflix in your ear at night, you may have a problem. You might be addicted to noise, and leveraging some of these apps against themselves might be helpful for you.
Give some practical advice, because again, I just think a lot of people don't realize the small things. Like I think there's a few people that may be hearing, oh, 30 minutes of social media, maybe I should try that. And that may be something that opens their eyes. So how do we do this? Because the other thing too, there should be some type, and maybe this is a strong term, there should be some type of Sabbath rest with technology. There should be something that we implement in our lives, maybe not a day, but maybe there should be some practice of, if we just said from this time to that time, I'm going to take a break. It could do wonders for our psyche. So give us some more practical tips.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, extremely practically, I would think about developing your bedtime routine that doesn't involve a screen or headphones. Like, I feel like one of the best and simultaneously best and worst things that ever happened to the iPhone or AirPods, because these things are like stuck in my ears permanently. I mean, like, it's like when they're not on, I can hear fine, and I can, and they stay charged a long time, and I can constantly listen to stuff. You can keep them in your ears when you go to sleep. That sort of behavior is addiction. It's very close to addiction. So I would say develop a bedtime routine that doesn't involve a screen or headphones. Lots of studies show that silence, go figure, sleeping with no noise actually helps you rest more. Obviously, the blue light from your cell phone emitting resets your circadian rhythm and causes you to not be able to sleep as well. And so your body thinks it's daylight. God creates your body to shut down when it's dark and to awake with cortisol when it's bright. That's God's rhythm he placed within the human body. We've manufactured and manipulated that with these devices. Now, these devices do good things, but if we don't manage them, they'll actually destroy our biology that God has actually created within us. So developing that bedtime routine that doesn't involve a screen, maybe it's a book, and maybe it's blue blocking glasses with the red lenses that allow you to maybe look at a screen without getting all of that blue light in there. Those are some ways. I would say starting your morning every day with some sort of silence and solitude, maybe a meditation practice, Bible study, prayer, all of the above kind of intertwined. What I like to do if I'm going to work out right in the morning is I like to go for early morning walks without headphones. Really, really helpful to get you connected with God early, get your body using, being natural, feeling that natural practice. And then even practically with email, for those of you that work, if you don't rely on your email 100% for your job, consider batch checking your emails. This is something that a guy named Tim Ferriss popularized. So you can batch check your emails 2 to 3 times a day. Maybe it's 9 o'clock, maybe it's 1:30, maybe it's 4 p.m. where you say, okay, I'm only going to check email these times and then I'm going to shut notifications off throughout the day or even take off email off your phone. I know you know people that the moment they check their phone at 3:45, they're getting ready to wind down for the day, maybe got an hour left, and they get an email, that stress hormone kicks in. And even if that email could have waited to the next day, their whole evening is ruined because they get an email at 5:15 or 5:45. And now they can't even think until they're able to get a response to that email at 8 o'clock. So we have to figure out how to do this. One of my next level hacks is eliminating the browser from my cell phone. Now, this isn't for everybody, but we're so used to being omnipotent, like I mentioned. Like, I don't think human beings are actually meant to have that amount of power. And I think it actually doesn't do well for us. And so being able to scroll every time and find an answer to something or look up every single thought you have pulls us out of being present from whoever we're with or whatever moment we're in. And so what I found when I eliminated having Safari or Chrome on my phone, my life is just better. And I think it's okay to admit to yourself to say, hey, listen, I don't know if I'm mature enough to have social media. And I'll be honest, I don't think anyone's mature enough to handle all of it at once. I just don't think we are. And I think we're seeing the ramifications of that, right? Another thing you can do is building, like you mentioned, those rhythms of solitude into your life, being able to say, okay, I'm going to spend a half a day every week without my cell phone. Maybe for me, I just do Saturdays without my phone as I have my kids anyway. I'm going to say, I'm going to leave my phone at home. You miss it the first few times. And then after that, you just go, man, I'm so happy this thing is gone. And we've all had those moments where we're like, man, I just want to throw this phone into a lake. I'm so stressed out. I know it's causing all my stress. And you just want to throw this thing and drop it into the ocean and never see it again. Having that day, that rhythm without that phone helps so much. And then I build a half day or a day a month where I just go away, go to the beach, read the Bible, get out of there, go on a bike ride, and you just don't have a phone all day for one whole day. Those are the sort of things that really, really help. And then even more spiritually, one of the things we need to do is really understand that we just don't have control. This phone gives us a false sense of control over our lives. It makes us believe that we have the power to control, to manipulate, to change, and to connect. And to some degree, it gives us some power, but it doesn't give us ultimate control. So if you suffer from anxiety or control, or if you suffer from anxiety, control is often an issue. It's often an issue. Anxiety is like trying to wear God's shoes and figure out the future and figure out what's coming next. And so if you can spiritually somehow get with God and let go of control, man, I'll tell you what, it'll help so much. And the funny thing about control is that you don't realize how little of it you have until you have none of it at all. And so a lot of us get to those breaking points and those moments where we're struggling. And when we can get to that breaking point and when we let go of control, man, we're just not as great as we think we are. That's okay. I don't need to constantly spend my time projecting an image on social media. I can let that go for just a little bit of time.
Sir, your insight and wisdom, I feel, won't just be enjoyable for those that listen, but will be transformed. Eddie Williams, thank you so much for this conversation.
I am honored, man. Love to be on again. I appreciate it. Hold
up. And there you have it, my conversation with Eddie Williams. Eddie, thank you so much for this conversation and giving some great suggestions regarding how to have holistic health. If you guys want to hear more about what Eddie Williams has to offer, check out Ex Nihilo Health on YouTube. And also, he will be making a second appearance on the Humble and Honest podcast very soon. I'll put a link in the show notes for his YouTube page. Check it out when you get the chance. And guys, I want to thank you also again for listening. Again, please be sure to leave a review if you haven't already. And I hope you will join me again next time on the next episode of the Humble and Honest Podcast.